While the children of Israel are living in Egypt, the Lord is dealing with Job in the land that was once controlled by Uz, the grandson of Nahor, Abraham's brother. Now, Job is a wealthy man with 7 sons, 3 daughters, 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 oxen, 500 female donkeys, and many servants, besides being considered the greatest man in the entire East, sought out by all men for his counsel. The story mentions 4 men by name and 2 groups of people that help us determine the timing of this story. The genealogical records previously given in the Bible help us now with the general time for characters that are found in the story of Job. Job is one. He is from the land of Uz. Eliphaz is a Temanite. Bildad is a Shuhamite. Zophar is a Naamanite. Elihu is a Buzite. Then there are the Sabians and the Chaldeans. Uz and Buz are the nephews of Abraham through his brother Nahor, and Teman is the oldest grandson of Esau. Shua is one of the sons of Abraham by his second wife, Keturah, and the Sabians are descendants of Saba, the grandson of Ham. So where does this place this? Well, in order for all of these boys, these descendants of Abraham, to have grown to an age to control the land and the land to be called by their name, it could have only occurred during the time when Israel and his descendants are in Egypt. With the cast of characters set, we will move on to the story of Job. On each of Job's adult children's birthday, the family gathers in that child's house to celebrate. And on that day, Job goes and he offers a sacrifice to the Lord for that child for forgiveness, just in case he might have accidentally sinned during the year. Now, Job is not only the patriarch of the family, but he is also the religious priest, leading them in their faith. It's a common position for the patriarchs of the family. It is also the practice of the godly sons of Job to come to worship with him on the 7th day of each week. Now, one day, Satan comes also, and the Lord asks him what he is doing. And he says, "I'm trying to find someone to tempt," he says. And the Lord says, "Have you thought about my servant Job?" Satan says back, "I can't do anything with him because he belongs to you, and you have put a fence around him. You have blessed him greatly, but if you will let me afflict him, he will curse you." So the Lord responds back and says, "Okay, he's yours. Attack him, but you cannot hurt him." And with the permission of the Lord, Satan attacks Job the next week by using the Sabians to steal Job's oxen, his donkeys, and he kills his servants who are working with him. A great wind blows down the house of the son whose birthday all the family is celebrating, and it kills all the brothers and sisters at one time. The Chaldeans come and they steal all the camels and kill the servants with them. And fire and brimstone fall from the sky and kill all the sheep and the servants tending them. When Job hears about this, he tears his robe and he falls to the ground to worship the Lord. And he says, "Naked I came into this world and naked I will leave it." And Job cries out to the Lord, and he blames neither God nor sin because of this tragedy that has happened to him. On the next Sabbath, at the regular time of worship, Satan again shows up, and the Lord asks him what he's doing there. "I'm trying to find someone to tempt," Satan says. "What have you thought about my servant Job?" the Lord replies. So Satan says to him, "Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. Touch his flesh and bone, and he will curse you face to face." So the Lord says, "He's in your power, but spare his life." So Satan gives Job these water-filled sores from the top of his head to the soles of his feet. Job takes and he breaks pieces of pottery and he scrapes them, and then he covers them with ashes to try to dry them out, but nothing works. Job's wife tells him, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" But Job calls her a foolish woman, saying, "We must accept the adversities from God as well as the good." In all of his adversities, Job does not sin. 3 friends hear of Job's trouble and they come to see him: Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And they weep and they cry for Job as they watch him suffer for 7 days without saying a single word to him. It has now been 21 days since Satan first received permission to afflict Job, and Job is ready to talk with his friends. Listen to a summary and paraphrase of what those men said. 8 days later, Job says, "Why have I ever been born? Why did I not die at my birth? I would have been better off dead than have to go through all this trouble." Eliphaz speaks up and says, "Job, may I speak to you? I know the answer to your questions, and so do you. You used to counsel all the people to walk in integrity because the innocent do not perish, but God punishes the sinner. You had better turn to God because he is chastising you. If you do, he will restore you." Job looks at Eliphaz and he says, "You have no idea how much God is making me suffer. If it were up to me, I wish God would crush me and get it over. But you, Eliphaz, you are no help at all. Show me my sin. I have been good, and this cannot be chastisement from God. I would rather die in a minute. Tell me why this is all happening. If I have sinned, God can pardon me, but I have done absolutely nothing wrong." Bildad speaks up and says, "You should never talk to God that way. God is never unjust in dealing with people. If you will just pray to God, he will pardon you. Remember, our fathers taught us that the man who forgets God will surely fail. God does not punish the upright, so it is evident that you are not upright." Job responds to him, "You're right. Yeah. But what can I say to God? How can I reach him? I wish I could plead my case in some court somewhere, but who will judge between me and God? I am righteous. I am innocent, and he is still punishing me. I did not do anything. Stop punishing me, God. Show me my sin, and I will take the punishment, but I have not sinned. God, why did you allow me to grow up if you knew this was going to be my mistreatment? Just let me die." Zophar says, "God will not justify you when you talk like this. You are full of arrogance and boasting. You say, 'I'm pure,' but God knows your sin. While there is still hope, get your heart right with God and he will accept you. There is no hope for the wicked except death." Job replies to Zophar, "So you think you know it all, and you are so smart. I know everything you know, and I know the power and the wisdom of God. He tests people. He works in our lives. If I could talk with God face to face, I would say, 'I'm right. I have done nothing wrong to deserve this tragedy. It is not fair. You friends need to stop because you are wearing my hopes away.'" Eliphaz replies to Job saying, "You are a rambling fool. You do not understand everything. You do not know everything, and you condemn yourself. God makes the wicked man suffer and the proud man take his place on his knees. You are godless, and you will suffer to the bitter end." Job looks at the guys and he says, "You are a horrible bunch of friends who are trying to bring me comfort. Whether I say anything or not, I am still suffering. Just by hearing your voices, I am suffering. I know that God has delivered me to the ungodly, and he is putting pressure on me with your words. As heaven and earth are my witnesses, I am not guilty. My only hope is to die and return to the dust." Bildad speaks up and says, "Why do you keep trying to justify your actions? The wicked are the ones who suffer, and you are suffering, so you must be wicked. It is the horrible fate of the man who does not know God." Job says, "Stop it. Just stop it. I'm not wicked. Is there any justice in the world? Please, God, crush me. You are my relatives, and you have all turned against me. Will one of you be on my side, or are you all afraid that this will happen to you? Now, if I could engrave it with an iron pen in stone, I would say, 'I know that my Redeemer lives.'" Zophar says, "Now that's enough of that. Since time began, the wicked, evil people get away with sin for a short time only. They seem to prosper, but in the end, their lives are filled with suffering and bitterness. His prosperity will be gone as well as his family, devastated by the wrath of God. Now that is what has happened to the wicked man, and that is where you are, Job. You are a wicked man. Job says, well, wait just a minute. Look around here. The wicked do prosper and nothing bad seems to have happened to them. They mock God and say, why should we serve God? Everything is just fine without him. They find no profit in prayer. Why do the wicked really get what they deserve? The godly people suffer more than the wicked. Check it out. Your statements are all simply lies, Job says. To that, Eliphaz replies, what good is your righteousness to God? Do you really think God is happy with you? Are you being punished because you are a sinner? He knows the things you have done in this dark of the night, even though we did not know it. Your true character is not exposed. You are guilty of sin and you are a hypocrite. Turn to God now and turn from your sin. God will hear you and will return to you all that you had, all that is good. You still have time to be delivered. Job says, I wish I could talk to God because I am innocent. God is the one who is hiding, not me. I have kept his commandments. I have done his will. God knows what is happening. Why doesn't he help me? People murder, people steal, people commit adultery, yet they prosper, and God lets them do it. Prove my words to be false. They are all true. Bildad says, God is never wrong. How can mortal man justify himself before God? We are worms. Why didn't you explain God's actions? How could we, worms that we are, explain his actions? To that, Job says, you've done nothing to help me. I know God. I know his power. I know his majesty. I know he is treating me unjustly. I will not lie. I will not confess sin. I have been righteous. I will never admit that I am at fault, not even to God. God judges the wicked. The mines of the world hold wealth and riches, but God's ways cannot be compared to the wealth of precious stones and minerals. God's wisdom is hard to mine out. However, God is God. The fear of the Lord is wisdom, and to leave evil is understanding. I have done nothing wrong. If I have, fine. I will take my punishment. But I haven't. I am pure, I am clean, and that's all I have to say on the matter. Now Elihu has been listening, and he's kind of angry with Job because he has justified himself before God. Likewise, Job is angry with the three men who have provided absolutely no answers and have condemned him. Now Elihu is a young man who has been waiting to speak out of respect for the three older men, and he finally speaks up, and he says, I thought that wisdom would increase with age, but I was wrong. None of you men have refuted Job's questions, not one of you at all. Now I am like a wine bag about to burst. I cannot hold in what I want to say. The Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty has given me life. And God is greater than man. Why do you not take into account what God is doing? He speaks in visions and dreams to keep the souls of men from going to the pit, allowing them to pass over Sheol. Let us choose what is right and know what is good. Far be it for God to do wickedness and the Almighty to do wrong. God will never act wickedly, and the Almighty will never pervert justice. His eyes are upon the ways of man, and he sees all his steps. When God keeps quiet, who can condemn him? When he hides his face, who can behold him? You men of understanding say that Job has done wrong and he is a sinner. Do you think Job's afflictions are in accordance with God's justice? You say, my righteousness is more than God's, but what advantage is that to you? God will not listen to an empty cry, nor will the Almighty regard it. There is yet more to be said on God's behalf. Will your riches keep you from disaster? Will your riches keep you from distress? Be careful not to turn to evil. God is exalted and we do not know him. He covers his hands with the lightning and commands it to strike the mark. The thunder is his voice. He tells the snow to fall on the earth, and his breath forms the ice. Consider the wonders of God. Can you spread the skies? God is awesome. We cannot find him. Then the Lord speaks from a whirlwind. And the Lord says, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me. Where were you when I set its measurements and laid its cornerstone? Tell me. Have you ever in your life commanded the morning and caused the dawn to appear? Have you ever entered the springs of the deep or walked in its gates? Do you know the way to the dwelling of light? Have you seen the storehouse of hail? Can you bind Pleiades or loosen the cord of Orion? Lead forth the constellations and seasons, or guide the bear in her satellites? Do you know the ordinances of heaven, or fix the rule over the earth? Job, will the fault finders contend with the Almighty? Let him who reproves God answer it." And Job says, "Lord, I am insignificant, and I cannot say a single thing of importance to you. I lay my hand over my mouth." The Lord replies, "Job, gird yourself up like a man, and you instruct me. Look at the behemoth which I made, as well as you. He eats grass like an ox, yet his strength is in his loins, and his power is in the muscles of his belly. Can you catch a leviathan with a fish hook, or press his tongue with a cord? Whatever is under the whole heaven belongs to me. It is mine." Job says, "I know you can do all things, and nothing you want to do can be thwarted. I declare that which I do not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I do not know." Then the Lord speaks to the three men, to the three friends. And he says, "My wrath is upon you because you have not spoken of me what is right. Take 7 bulls and 7 rams and go to my servant Job and offer them up as a sacrifice for yourself, and Job will pray for you. I will accept his prayers, not yours." So the three men take the offering just as the Lord has commanded and offer it before Job. Now all of these events take place in less than 30 days from the time that the Lord allowed Satan to afflict Job the first time. But that's not the end of the story, because Job will live another 140 years and the Lord is going to bless him. The Lord restores all the fortunes of Job twofold when he prays for his friends. His brothers and sisters come to fellowship with him, and each one gives him 1 coin and a gold ring. And over the next 140 years, the Lord increases Job's wealth double. He gives him 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camel, 1,000 oxen, 1,000 female donkeys, a multitude of servants. He has 7 more sons and 3 more daughters. No women in the entire world are as fair as the daughters of Job. Before his death, Job enjoys seeing his sons and his grandsons as far as the 4th generation. Job is blessed. With the blessing of Job completed, the Lord now turns his attention back to Egypt, where his chosen people are still living. Abraham had been told by the Lord that they would be there for 400 years. They've been there almost 400 years. In fact, they've been there 350 years, and it's now time for a baby to be born. The baby who will come and lead them out of all of their struggles that they are now going through in Egypt. For the Pharaoh has not remembered Joseph, and he's having all the Israelites work under forced labor. But God's got a plan. It's 1555, and Moses is to be born. And in a miraculous series of events, the Lord places Moses in just the right place so that he can one day, at the age of 80, lead God's chosen people out of Egypt and over into the wilderness. He will lead them in the wilderness as God prepares and gives them all the instruction they need to know how to be a holy people.